Warm welcome to all in attendance tonight. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Are there any newcomers? On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to this meeting? Yes. Hi,
Hey,
Diane.
Diane.
Welcome. Thanks for coming. At this time,
Got one
please.
more.
Oh, pardon me, Jeremy.
Hey,
Hey,
Jeremy.
Jeremy. Welcome.
Welcome.
At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is from the foreword to the book Alcoholics Anonymous, the first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of life has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Lee from the Emotional Sobriety Group and Meredith from, I don't remember. Sorry.
Actually, we're from the Great Bridge Big Book Study on Tuesdays at 7. He moved. He just found out that we'll be speaking together like 3 days ago. We're like, yes! And I was like, I get a ride! Woohoo! I don't have to drive.
I will read the first paragraph on page 89, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Who wants to go first?
You want me to go first?
Yes, Lee's good.
I'm Lee, an alcoholic.
Hey, Lee.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you all for having me tonight. My sobriety date is May 28th, 2020. I have a sponsor, as you just heard. I have a home group, and I do sponsor a couple of guys right now. For the first guy asked me to sponsor him, this was kind of like about a year and a couple months, maybe. I was kind of not really happy about it because I didn't quite know how badly I could screw this up. But then at the same time, I was also looking towards the program with completion. This is number 12. I'm almost done. I didn't realize at that part that this is a lifetime journey. I knew I would come to AA long past the 12th step, but getting it completed was kind of important to me. And that went well. I was in close contact with a sponsor the whole time that I was sponsoring the first guy, and that was going really smooth. And I was, sharing back with my sponsor some of the concerns and difficulties I had, and it wasn't quite as difficult as I had myself believing it. So then God decided that I really needed a challenge. And then at a Thursday night, a guy asked me, says, "Can you give me a ride home?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And jumped in the car. We're driving home and making a little small talk with him. He's fairly new. And I I said, "You got a sponsor?" And he goes, "Well, I was going to ask you, but you didn't put your hand up." And so we talked. And by the time I let him out, I agreed that I would sponsor him. That's not a good idea. You probably want to meet with a person pretty closely for a few times to make sure that that's going to be a good fit. But it turns out this was exactly what I was supposed to do. Short order, he came over to my place, and during this time, I found out the guy was in prison for 10 years. This kind of rattled me a little bit. When I came to AA, I thought I had problems. I thought I had really deep, horrible problems. I quickly concluded after a while that I didn't really have problems. I had a series of high-level self-imposed inconveniences of my own doing. But in comparison, I didn't have problems. So I go back to my sponsor. I said, "Hey, I think I've made a mistake. This guy's actually been in prison for 10 years. I don't know what I can do for him." He goes, "Yeah, you know exactly what to do." I said, "What?" He says, "Start on page one, just like we did." And I did. We started on page one. And that was, I like to say magical, but that was really truth-telling, because what that did when we started in short order, I realized I've got what he's got, and he's got what I've got. It doesn't matter that he'd been in prison for it doesn't matter that I had never been in prison, much less I was in jail overnight one time. I was so long ago they didn't even call it DUI back then; they called it DWI. But we were still linked together. He had the same thing I had. I had what he had, and that was telling for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Meredith, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Meredith.
Thank you, Amy, for allowing me to be here in Simple Actions. My sobriety date is December 27th, 2015, and Lee and I share the same home group. Actually, we had shared the same home group, and this is going to be an introductory to my what I'm about to talk. We had the same home group prior. Then he left to make this one that we're in now together. So then I want to go into to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have and host friends. This is an experience you must not miss. And I'll tell you what. I was at the meeting when Lee came in for his first meeting and his second meeting, and he brought his beautiful spouse with him, and I was there. And to watch him grow into what he is now has been such a blessing for me, because I see how he is, how hopeless he was with the drink, and he was about to lose everything. And now I'm part of his growth because I get to see the connection that he has with his wife, with his two children, and now his grandchildren, and what he has become a productive member of that family now. And it's all because of this program. And he's actually even invited me over for dinner once, and Olga cooked, and it was delicious. And we would go to the jail at the brig together as well. And he would drive then too. So we've been on a journey, our own 12-step
Yeah.
journey. And it's been an absolute blessing to be with you and to sit with here tonight
Thank you.
as well. I can't tell you the look that I see in newcomers of the sadness I see. And I just want to tell them it's okay, it'll be all right. But we have to make sure that frequent is the bright spots. We have to make sure that I have to make sure that I don't lose sight of where I was once, what I once was. I too was a newcomer in needing of help. And if it wasn't for my sponsor and the women that surrounded me, and some of you are in this room, I don't know where I would be right now. So, and I'm grateful for everyone. Thanks.
Thank you. Our second reading is on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. But say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Lee.
Lee, an alcoholic. This paragraph here was key in me being able to be an effective sponsor with the second gentleman I was telling you about, and with the first one for that matter. I was able to have deep conversations with the guy, and that's not something I would normally do. I would have kept it a light topical. First of all, I remember back when I was first around, and my first sponsor would tell me that I was doing more for him than he was doing for me. And I didn't understand that. That didn't make a great deal of sense to me. You know, up through about th 2, 3, 4 months of sobriety, I was just happy that I was going this long without drinking. Every day was an adventure. You know, and it was 2020. Everything was closed down. There was nothing to do but think about drinking. But once I finally had all of my defenses broken down about AA, and I talk about that, just to give you a little background. When I was about 10 or 11 years old, my sister and I got caught smoking my grandmother's cigarettes. That was a family-wide scandal that many people couldn't believe happened. And the more rigorous the punishment was we received, the better parents I think they thought they were going to be, as in the eyes of the rest of the family. On a Saturday morning, one of the things we had to do was go with my dad into the Florida hospital. I grew up in Orlando, Florida, and watch this horrible movie about people who have cigarettes or who have cancer as a result of smoking cigarettes. On the way there, it's apparent that we're nowhere close to the hospital. And my sister says, "Daddy, the hospital's not over here." He said, "No, I'm going to show you something." He pulled up a couple more blocks, and he over there on the park bench, there was people sleeping underneath newspapers. So see those people sleeping on those benches? Those are alcoholics. They got that way because they were smoking cigarettes at a young age. So I suppose that kind of worked because I never got real interested in cigarettes. And it would be several more years before I would really get interested in drinking. I told you that to tell you this. That was the foundation of what I'm about to read you right now. This is on the second page of the spiritual experience, back here in the very back of the book. The last paragraph, it says, "There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. The principle is contempt prior to investigation." And I suffered from that for a long period of time. That kept me drunk. That kept me nothing wanting when my drinking got really bad and the topic of AA came up. I'm not an alcoholic because I knew I wasn't an alcoholic. My dad told me when I was 10, 11 years old, I was not an alcoholic. He pointed to the people on the benches that were alcoholics. That wasn't me. And that can kind of dwell and grow and fortify inside me and really keep me from really wanting to become. So I wanted to share that with you because it was important to me afterwards that I not when I realized that I had the contempt prior to investigation, and how blind it kept me for many years. I wanted to wipe it away as clearly as I could and become open that, you know what, maybe I've been wrong about other things. So AA's been a journey, and it continues to be a journey. I learn new stuff every day. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. Thank you,
Thank
Lee. I like it here. When it says, oh, I lost it now. If he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles out liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. My sponsor would tell me a lot, and she would say to me, "Shuddy, just be quiet. Just study, like put your lips together, don't say anything, and let them talk. They need someone to listen to them, not to fix them per se right away. We know that this is an inside journey that only they truly, with the help with their higher power, can they fix themselves inside. But she would always say, let them talk, let them show you what they need. And then go from there. I just absolutely love this book. Bill and Dr. Bob just really laid it out for us. And if he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles of liquor has caused you, the multiple times that you've been pulled over for DUI, or the times you've been in fights, or, well, I think we all know where we go when we drink. And of course, in a light mood, tell them about the humorous stories of your escapades. I could tell you one, but then it'd be on the record, and I won't discuss it. But get him to tell some of his. This will start a bond with a possible potential sponsee, and you start gaining their trust. And with trust, you build more of a foundation where he or she can approach you more and call you more and develop a journey that can be absolutely beautiful in the good times and in the bad. I have a story once. My sponsor, real early in my recovery with her, she tried to pawn me off on someone else. She did. I always say it every time I hit my anniversary, whenever she gives me the chip, and I kind of make her feel bad now, but it's an inside joke. But I didn't want to go because I wanted what she had so much that I just like sank my teeth into her and she couldn't shake me. And I hope that's what I bring to my sponsees that I've had in the past, or an opening that they could always call me if they want to as well. I just know that we can go in places that can be very dark and very lonely very quickly. And it is up to us, the sponsor, and it's up to us when we work with others, how we can, I don't want to say tell people what to do, because you can't, like, these are just like 12 suggestions, right? I'm not telling my sponsee what to do, but I'm opening their door to suggest that they've got someone and they're not alone. That's all I got.
Thank
Thanks.
you. We're going to continue on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it on the chap in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless future of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a really instrumental in me being able to, because I couldn't come up with any kind of a meaningful dialogue back and forth. So having the book for both of us to read back and forth was a is a good conversation starter for me anyhow. And that will keep me from that, that keeps me on the task. I was working with a young man one time. Matter of fact, I still think about that guy from time to time. A lady in one of the meetings came, Lee, I wanted to meet somebody. Lee, this is so-and-so. So-and-so, this is Lee. He just got out of rehab today, and I thought you would make a good sponsor. Okay, I'm going to go and let you talk. And here I am talking to this complete stranger. I'd never even met him before. And that was I felt very ill-equipped to talk with him. He was a 100% atheist. He told me not even agnostic. He was an atheist. He's an engineer, and he had scientific knowledge that he could show me that there was no such thing as God if I was willing to see. Matter of fact, he showed up at my house one time. We were getting ready to read the book, and he showed up with this thing called Smart Recovery. I looked at it, and it is grossly different than anything that we do here in AA. And that was like two different languages, you know? And I said, you know, there's nothing I know about this. I don't know. This is what has worked for me. This is what I can help you with. We didn't see eye to eye. And I, matter of fact, I went as far as to find somebody with any meaningful amount of sobriety in the rooms where I could, you know, refer him to as a sponsee, because I wasn't getting anywhere with him. And I'll never quite understand this, but, on a Saturday night, in the middle of a meeting, I start getting texts from the guy, and he had drank himself to the point to where somebody called an ambulance and they took him to the hospital. And he told the ambulance driver, "I'm trying to kill myself with alcohol." They believed him. They put him in a room for folks who indicate they're about to commit suicide. He asked me if I would come down there to the hospital. I said, "Why does he want to see me?" I get to the hospital and they're asking me what my relationship was with him. And I told him, I've been, you know, he's a friend of mine. We've been helping. And then the girl behind over here, this is just great. Right in a whole full waiting room in the hospital on a Saturday night. That's the AA sponsor. He's expecting him. I thought, oh, wow. That is just perfect. So they led me on back there. And I mean, he was a real hard case. And he told me he blew a .4 something and that the doctors were wondering why he was still alive. And then I got a wonderful idea. I thought this would be the most salient thing I could say to him. And I said to him, "Do you think that maybe that you're still alive because God's not through with you yet?" That was the craziest thing he thought he had ever heard. He said, "What? No, I'm alive because I have a very high tolerance to alcohol." So once again, this, I didn't feel like this was going very well. And in the end, I was there for maybe an hour, hour and a half, I think. And it was getting time for me to go. And he asked me, he said, "Well, before you go, don't you want to pray?" I said, "Well, sure." He says, "I know you believe. Just because I don't believe doesn't mean I don't think you believe." And I thought, well, maybe I'm getting somewhere now. But he was going to rehab the next day. We prayed. I didn't hear from him I didn't hear from him again for like 4 or 5 months. And it was October a year ago, I think. I got a text message from him late on a Sunday night. He says, "I'm back, but I don't want to talk on the phone," because he knew all I would do was talk on the phone. He would send me these long epistle text messages that I would have to try to dissect and then try to say, I just couldn't stand that. I would call him back and I'd say, let's talk. He says, don't, I don't want to talk, but I want to let you know I'm not coming back to AA. I'm going to the smart recovery place when I get out. And he says, maybe I can find, he says, I know life is meaningless, but if I can stop drinking, maybe I can find happiness. So we texted. I said, I fully understand. I respect what you want. Never hesitate to give me a call. And I never heard from him again. So I think about him from time to time. And you know, I send him a text message on Father's Day, I think, to say Happy Father's Day. Anyway, that's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I like it here where it says, and be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw to his own conclusions. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibility he can, if he's not too alcoholic, but insist that if he is severely affected, there may be a little chance he can recover by himself. I fought the idea that I was an alcoholic, because, just like Lee, it was everyone else was the alcoholic and not me. So when, I started coming to this program in 2014 and I had my relapse and all that, and then I had my spiritual awakening at the end of the year. And even in the first 6, 7, 8 months, I knew I was an alcoholic, but I still have an alcoholic brain where it kept telling me, you're not an alcoholic. Are you sure you're an alcoholic? Are you sure? I would have thoughts in my head, telling me all the time that, you're not an alcoholic. You're not an alcoholic. And then I was told to read some of the stories in the back of the book. And this is why the book is so good. And I just fell in love with this story called Window of Opportunity on page two, on 419, 421, sorry, 421. And I got to get my readers on here. And actually, the gentleman came and spoke. On him, the one that wrote it actually came here in Norfolk this past, well, last February, and it was such a blessing to meet the young man. And so about this story, he was about 18, 19, 20 years old. He fell out of a frat house window, head first, went to the hospital and lived. He was obviously drunk. And then it writes back, as soon as I look back on that period, I realize how true it is that one of the primary difference between alcoholics and non-alcoholics is that non-alcoholics change their behavior to meet their goals, and alcoholics change their goals to meet their behavior. And as soon as I read that, I was hooked. I knew I was an alcoholic and I was not going to change. And from then on, I know that I can help others, because even when it does creep in my head from time to time, oh, I can have a glass of wine or a beer or something, I can drink, but I have to come to the conclusion that I'm the alcoholic. And once I figured that out, I can help other people. But it's not my job to tell you're an alcoholic, because you, meaning my sponsee, or if someone does come up to me, 9 times out of 10 will run away. And I don't want that newcomer or that person to run away. I want them to stay and find a new way of life that I can show them, or maybe someone else in this program can show them. I think that's all I got.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Our last reading is from page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed to never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
Thank you. Yeah, this was tough stuff for me to not so much to receive from my sponsor. I've been around church. I grew up around church. I've been around, church and the Bible pretty much most of my adult life. So it was very difficult for me to listen to somebody express their doubts in this regard. This was truly the easy way out for me. When I first showed up in AA some 5.5 years ago, I would have gladly explained to you, I'm probably one of the more spiritual people you've ever met in your life. Problem was, I was spiritually sick most of my adult life, and I had no clue. I had no clue that I didn't have a relationship with God. And that therein lies the biggest promise of the 12 steps to me was to finally, at 60 some years old, develop a relationship with God where I could truly stay sober. That was the biggest payoff for me. And that's what I wanted to try to share with other people. And I don't do this real well with a lot of folks because it's difficult for me to see things from someone who has no. And I get a lot of help. I ask a lot of questions. I ask other people, how should I talk to this guy? What should I say now? Everybody always points back to the book. Everybody always points back to the book. And I'm not able to do it as well as some other folks are. And I don't know how somebody who's refuses to even consider living by spiritual principles could ultimately end up having a spiritual awakening, which is foundational to all, for all of us. To be able to get that far. My spiritual awakening took place in my car, outside my sponsor's front door when I started to get ready to go do the fifth step. I've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And finally, I've been to marriage counseling, I've been a psychologist. I've been to all kind of people throughout my life, and my wife and I would generally go in the beginning, and after about the second visit, sometimes the third, whoever the miracle marriage counselor was at the moment, they would say, "Mrs. Halyard, I don't need to see you anymore. Mr. Halyard, I'd like to see you twice a week for the next 12 weeks, and or until the insurance runs out." And that's when I would start to lie to them and not be truthful or honest. I wouldn't tell them exactly what was going on because I was by myself. There was nobody holding me accountable. I'd had about 4 or 5 months, maybe 6 months of not drinking that was becoming sobriety that I didn't want to get thrown away. Now, you won't find this in the big book, but this is what I did. We showed up the week before we were going to do the fifth step. I took the first the worst three things out of my inventory, and I said those out loud to my sponsor. Two of them he had been involved with. The third one, he said, "Keep writing. We're going to get through this." When I went out and got my car after leaving his, that's when I felt a spiritual experience take place. I said, "What am I doing? What am I doing? I just went over and told this guy stuff that I would never tell anybody about for my whole." And you know what? I wasn't fearful. I wasn't anxious. I drove home the way I usually went home before I got to AA. When I got to AA, I would change my route so I wouldn't have to go by the ABC store. But I went right by, and I wasn't haunted by the liquor store over there. I drove right by it. So things were changing and for the better. And that's about it. Thank you. Oh, okay.
So we're reading. Oh, okay.
Two more. Okay.
So then we're right on time.
We're perfect.
Perfect. Okay, good. I would like to say that there's an opportunity where I could be the walking big book for someone, just like everyone in this room, and that's on Zoom. So my friend's mother passed away early in January. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there at the wake. But you know, we talked about it, and you know, she was cool and everything like that. But I really wanted to go, and she's like, "It's fine." And I keep telling myself God wanted me exactly where He needed me. And I get a call from her on Monday. She's like, "Hey, I'm changing her name, but can you help out Jane?" I'm like, "What's wrong with Jane?" It's like, "Well, you know, this is what's happening." And she said everything that an alcoholic does. She said, "And you're the only one I know that's in recovery. And it seems to be working for you." And I was just really floored by it because, I mean, I've got 10 years, and they've been some challenging years, but I don't know if I've helped her at all, but I said I will do my best. So I called Jane up, and it went to voicemail. "Oh, I'm really busy at work. Call me at this time." So what do we do? I called her at that time. "Oh, I'm so sorry. The kids are sick," right? Over text. "Call me tomorrow at this time." So I called her tomorrow at that next time. Same excuse. And I was just like, I did it for 3 days straight because I know how awesome this program is. I know what we get out of it, what our higher power and our God gives us to handle situations and all our affairs, good and bad. And then finally, I just sent her a text. I shot her a link of where her nearest AA, you know, she doesn't live in New Jersey or here in Virginia. I shot her the local AA house. That's her. I go, this is your AA. Go to your meeting." And I was frank with her, right? "Continue to speak of alcoholism, the illness, and the fatal mentality. Talk about the condition of the body and the mind, which is accompanied. Keep his attention focused." Okay, blah, 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 blah. Doctors loathe. Okay, it just says here, not to bring, oh, I can't remember where it saw it, but "Tell him exactly what happened to you, your concept of God." Basically, I told her we go to three places. We go to rehab, we go to jail, or we die. You choose. I'm here if you need me. And I left it at that. And I mean, I don't know what's happening to her right now, if she's taken my suggestions or not. I do pray for her every day. She is someone that I do know. But I can't. The only thing I can be is hopefully when she's ready to talk, she'll call me. And I'll be ready to pick up, because when the hand of AA always reaches out, I want to make sure that I can, you know, grab it, you know. And for that, I am responsible, right? I had to plug in that one, right? That's all I got.
All right. I was wrong. There's no early escape tonight. There are two more readings. The next is on page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions.
I can't say anybody's really followed my suggestions with any degree of rigidity, but they were both really pleased to find out that we could call it off whenever they wanted to. That was something they all, the one guy, the very first guy, he's still with me. We speak every day. He helped me start the new meeting on Tuesday night in Great Bridge. And the other guy, the guy that was in prison, I told you about, I speak with him every day as well. He's moved to Carolina. I don't see him nearly as much anymore, but that was such an eye-opening experience and continues to be on a regular basis. And has caused me to open my eyes. AA on the whole has caused me to have such a broader, open mind about everything. And then that leads not always right. That other people that I meet, many of the people that I meet have a different way of looking at things that is completely different than what I would do, but on a number of different things. But overall, it's it works out well. And by and large, when I'm going back to my sponsor and I'm repeating to him what we said, what was spoken of, what should I do next? And I'm developing this concern for somebody else, that's completely counterintuitive to any way I've ever felt about anybody prior to ever coming to AA. So yes, that's where I can see where it does help me more than it does them, even if they dismiss me and they want nothing more to do with it. Thank you.
At least they tell you that they don't want to be with you. Mine just don't call me anymore. All right. Well, I pray for them as much as I can. And I hope they're well. I keep having I keep writing the word suggest in my portion of the big book. Suggest how how important it is that he places the welfare of other people ahead of his own. That will bring you that will brings me out of selfishness, my own selfishness, because I can tend to be my own victim, and for me to help another alcoholic places me in their shoes and allows me to help them recover and allows me to understand and have compassion of where they've been. And they understand that I've been where they've been. And who doesn't like talking about themselves? I mean, hello, you're actually giving permission to talk about yourselves and your crazy antics that I've done. I love it. I love it. If you talk and has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. I love it. I've made so many friends in this program because of this, because of, I'll just leave it that I just made so many new friends and I continue to grow in this program and I love it. Maybe you have disturbed him about that question of alcoholism. This is all too good. The more hopelessness he feels, the better, and he will be more likely to follow your suggestions. I like to say that my sponsor tells me, and she actually got it from Al-Anon, is that it's what I call, oh God, I just lost it. Oh God, what is it called? Give me a second. It's detached with love. I see them as the alcoholic and I love them for it. I give them the suggestion that I've done in my life and in my recovery. And with that, I hope they can take that and make it into their own recovery. But once again, I got to detach with love. And if they want to leave me, and that's fine, right? We give them permission to go. I just hope that that their higher power will follow them and be able to help them get through this. I like I said, I can only suggest what has helped in my recovery. I'm not the end all be all. My sponsor always tells me if you don't like what I have to say, then talk to another woman. And then I always say, fine, I will. And then I would call three other women, and two out of the three women said exactly what my sponsor had said. And the third woman got on board my pity train. And I was like, okay, I don't want to be pitiful. I don't want to be my own victim. And my sponsor was right. So I know that if I don't like what what my sponsor says, I can find a friend and that I've made over these years to help me. And with these suggestions, I've learned a lot about myself and about others. Thanks for letting me share.
Now we are on the final reading of the evening. We will conclude on page 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have, what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. Lee.
Yeah, this is an indication and a call to action to me. I don't stick my hand out nearly as much as what this book suggests that we should do. And so this is just eye-opening and a good reminder for me to go back and hear this again. I'm active with a home group. I'm active with a couple of guys. I'm generally always available. And I have had, like I said, a few guys that just said, this is just not for me. This is not working. And we never made the joint statement that we were detaching with love, but I still see them around, and I just wasn't the guy. I just wasn't the guy, and that's okay. And that's worked out well. I mean, who would have ever thought that I would be driving from South Chesapeake to come to a meeting up here in downtown Norfolk, So, you just never know what's going to happen in AA. Thank you.
I have written here, it's a hand up, not a hand out. I always want to fix everybody, fix everything. I always want to get involved. Not so much my way is better, but oh, you need help with that. Or why you can I give you a hand? Or it's always like, why do I have to insert myself? I find it that if I want to help myself, like when I was the newcomer, if I want to help myself, I have to ask for help. I can't have people come to me so they can rescue me. And I have to remind myself, yes, I will go up to the newcomer. I will introduce myself and I will give them my number if they ask for it, or they ask me for their number and we switch numbers and whatnot. But I won't call them because if they want the help, they've got to reach out. They have to learn to contact someone. I have to make sure. I don't know how to say it without sounding terrible. I really don't know how to say it. I don't want to discourage them not to call me, obviously, but you can't help someone who's not going to help themselves. You really can't. And if I continue to put my efforts into one that doesn't respond, then the ones that are calling me, I'm losing out on something good, or I'm losing out on helping them recover. And I have to make it a point that Recovery is about self. Recovery is about you making the effort to cover. I have to make sure that I stay in the middle of the boat. And in order to do that, I call my sponsor every day. I go to meetings. I do my service work. I'm an intergroup rep. I've been a GSR rep. I've been a secretary. I've been to conventions. I do speak at meetings on like one, you know, all over Hampton Roads. And then that helps me stay in the middle of the boat. And that looks good to a newcomer, then you come to me and I will show you how I did it. That's plain to see, but I have to do it. So that's actually my point. Thanks for letting me share.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket.
We're done.
The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? James.
And James, an alcohol.
Hey, James.
There's home groups. We just went through part 12, part 1 tonight, next week. Come back for part 2 following week. We're going to do dinner and speak.
Whoop, whoop. February 9th.
15 weeks we started it. Step 1 next week. And I made a little comment last week like, this is our Super Bowl. It so happens. The day of this gathering of speakers, the day after the real Super Bowl, or our Super Bowl. So, hot mother, bring a dish. They'll all share. Starts at 6 o'clock. Speakers at 7. We got Tommy B. from Richmond, Virginia, going to come down to 64 and share her story with us. We'd love to have you all. More married. Bring. And you got nice company pamphlets over there, still left over. Take some back to your home groups tonight if you're visiting and pass mine.
Thank you, James.
James, that sounds dope. What night is that again?
February 9th.
That's like 2 weeks from tonight.
2 weeks?
No.
2 weeks.
Emily.
Emily. So, I'm a Zoom workshop. What? February 17th. And it's on a Tuesday, so don't show up here. It's going to be on Zoom, on our Simple Action Zoom. Through either our website or on the meeting night app. And it is going to, it's what's the topic here?
It's in the harmony, spiritual principles.
For a lifetime.
For a lifetime.
There's wires for that too, right?
Narrative alcoholic. In the harmony, women in Ghent's 23rd anniversary, January 29th. That's this week. 5:30 is a potluck. 6 p.m. a speaker is the First Lutheran Church on Collie. That's around the corner. And then we have the Oceanfront Conference coming up in February.
Can men go to the Women in Ghent thingy?
I think so.
You don't really?
I don't know. I don't know. Anyone from Ghent? I don't know.
I've been before and there were no men there.
They were there. Okay.
I'm guessing I'm not home.
Hey, Bates.
Hey,
101.
Sunday morning was having their breakfast and speakers. Breakfast and speaker I love. I'm sure they love everyone.
All right.
Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available on the table to my right. Everything is free except big books. See a home group member if you need one. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're a little bit shy, you can send us an email at info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held just up Colonial Avenue at Cafe Stella.
Mm.
In closing, can we all thank our panel again for tuning in?
Good job. Love you.
Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have an opportunity to come up and say thank you to Meredith and Lee. And Lee has volunteered to read a vision for you.
I'm Lee, an alcoholic.
Hey, Lee.
A vision for you, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then, thank you.
Thank you. We have a nice way of closing. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done.
On earth as it is in heaven, and give us this day our daily bread,
and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory,
forever and ever.